Welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have Reverse Thieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode 10, The Demon Dragon of Fire Dragon Mountain. That title might be a little repetitive, but we finally get the big confrontation. Last we saw, everybody was sort of rushing towards Fire Dragon Mountain, and Shooting Star was sort of terrorizing the land. And we pick up, I feel like, just a little bit of a time jump, very small, from the previous episode to this one. The Parn and Party have actually have hooked up with Kashu's group. You know, they were on their way last time we saw them. And Shooting Star flames and death and bad things are happening. And Parn runs. I know you guys are going to be so shocked to hear this. He runs out into the middle of danger and does something good for once. It works out. He grabs onto the ballista, burning his hands, but is able to shoot the arrow into the dragon's eye,
which hardly kills him, but at least gives him enough pain that Shooting Star has to leave, and they can regroup and go, all right, well, that plan, not our best. And at the same time, Ashram and his team, they're not even bothering to try to confront him on the field as much as he might have tried that in the last episode. They are going to just directly go into his cave and get the Scepter of Domination, because that will give them a huge advantage over Shooting Star.
But Ashram still is like, no, but I'm going to take out that ancient dragon, even though that dragon does not seem to care at all that these people are infiltrating his mountain.
But Kate, his sword cries out to destroy the dragon.
For blood! And Pyrotes tries to dissuade him of this. He's kind of frustrated by it and makes a side comment about her wounding herself in the previous episode. And they eventually settle on the idea that, everyone can come with Ashram to further into the cave as long as they don't get in his way. And if they do get in his way, everyone's okay with him just murdering them. Thanks.
I do feel that has a parallel with the conversation where Parn's like, I want to join the dragon killing team. And Kosh is like, you can come. I'm very hesitant to bring you, but you've actually got to follow orders for once. And not just run off the Leroy Jenkins-like.
I mean, Kashu has way too much faith in Parn that he's not just going. He literally just moments before, and even just showing up at this place in time, is a disobeying orders. So, you know, whatever, Kashu, sure. I think they just are convinced that, they can't prevent it, and they also need three people to carry these lances that we find out are in this legend about slaying the dragon. So they all just go sneaking in the back way into Fire Dragon Mountain, which no one has ever returned from. And once they get inside and get through some of the traps, they end up encountering and getting ambushed by Ashram's group on the other side.
And there's a bit of a confrontation as the group tries to defeat Ashram, but they find out that he has the Scepter of Domination, which calls the dragon to the cave. So you have Ashram fighting Parn and the rest of that group, the two groups fighting, and then eventually into the middle of it comes Shooting Star, who is kind of his own army, as it were.
He starts destroying, the cave is starting to collapse. They do end up stabbing Shooting Star with these special lances. Ashram and Parn face off. The dragon tries to like burn them. The scepter stops him. Pyrites throws herself in front of Ashram. I mean, it's just a very dramatic ending. Oh, also, Wagnard's spy, who I think might be Sagitt from Street Fighter 2, steals the scepter and is like ninjas out that, you know, he's going to take it back to Wagnard. And before we know it, Ashram is holding Pyrites in his arms. She has stopped the dragon fire from taking them. That ends up, I mean, she doesn't get burned, but it seems to take all the rest of her energy, and he holds her in his arms as the cave collapses around them. Parn and crew escape and watch this from outside, and Parn looks wistful about, I don't know, about a dude holding an elf in his arms and dying, and that's probably having some moment. No, Parn doesn't think that deeply, but he was more like, Ashram was like a good foe.
No, okay, he was probably thinking, that volcano blows up pretty.
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
So, Parn, despite many, many, many kisks otherwise, still has his charge strategy. But in this episode, he's actually been slightly effective in that. There's the time with the ballista. He actually gets a shot off. He's the only one who actually does any damage to Shooting Star in that whole incident. He actually was able to take out one of Ashram's generals by charging him and killing him. And he fought against Ashram decently well. He gets disarmed, and really, Shooting Star is the person who saves him more than anybody else. But he has progressed enough as a fighter that his dumb charges actually take out some enemies, or maybe are effective, as well as being foolish. So it's not 100% failure rate anymore, which in his case is actually growth.
And I thought I don't know if you brought it up on the podcast, Al, but you definitely have brought it up when we're watching. I liked your point that Ashram is also sort of a Parn. He's just a dark and broody Parn, but he also charges in.
Parn and Kashu, they have this whole plan. They're like, we've got to go in stealthily, because if Shooting Star sees us and decides to kill us, we are toast. If we're not prepared for him, we the only way we're going to do this is by ambushing him. And Ashram's plan is, let's just stroll in the front door. And he's just lucky that Shooting Star is like,
I don't feel like it right now.
I just got stabbed in the eye. I don't want to deal with these guys. I'll kill them on my way back. And, like, that is 100% a Parn plan. Like, that would have been Parn's plan if he wasn't with Kashu, who decided to find, like, a sneaky way in.
And speaking of Ashram, I think he gets dark and broody anime hero points for showing in his dark and broody way that he cares about Pyrites. And I guess that's like a big thing that happens, right? That's significant. First, he comments on the wound that she has given herself. Then he's like, sure, I'll kill you. But he doesn't, even though she gets in his way.
He is not as focused on the scepter, because he goes to save her when she pulls off the cliff. And that's when Sagitt is able to steal the scepter.
And he...
And the tiger knee.
And what?
Isn't one of Sagat's moves Tiger Knee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? And then he, like we said, he holds her in his arms and doesn't leave, even though he could get out alive. He stays there with her, and he says her name, which I think she just... She's like very happy. You could see it on her face. I think... Pyrites, on the other hand, her character development is, let me be killed and thrown in front of things for the man that I love, whatever.
I will say, since we mentioned it, although he only has a very small scene of the week, it was so small we didn't even put in the recap, but Slain is positioned to be back in the story because the High Priestess is like, all right, stuff's getting for real in this island. It may be accursed, but it can still go downhill a few levels. So could you start handling this? The Priestess's daughter is going with him as well. So we've got kind of a new duo going out there. They're back in the game.
And I think I'll mention here that we also see the first bit of very minor jealousy from Deedlit about Sheeris and Parn. Because there's like that like really subtle moment where there's she's standing in the doorway and like Sheeris is bandaging Parn's hand. So I guess like that also happened.
I will also mention that this is in character growth as much as is Orson like the highest level character in the group because he is the one who like manhandles Shooting Star and then Kashu and Parn just like, what? Attack him.
I think from what we've seen, Orson is the scariest dude. Like everyone, as soon as they see him, are like, we don't want to fight anymore. We're good. We're going to go now. So I think so. I think if Shooting Star had been in his right mind, he also would have felt that. But he was distracted by other things going on in his cave. I think otherwise he would have said, I don't want to fight today with this guy.
It almost feels more like he's there. He's like an NPC that the GM put there. Like, I have a few people down, so I'll just put this really powerful guy with you guys.
Just for when you need him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I actually think it's a shame, though, because I feel like Orson is the character we really know the least about. He seems so cool. Like, we need some more Orson.
And the rest of US Acres.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
So I think the little battle at the very beginning with Shooting Star had a little Hobbit feel to it. When the setup, the way that we see it's visualized, obviously they don't shoot Shooting Star in you know, that missing scale, but they shoot him right in the eye, and like the drama of that scene, I feel like really feels similar.
It's a little more like some of the failed attempts to defend against Smaug before they actually kill him. I think it was supposed to be reminiscent of that. Like, these failed attempts just to show you how powerful this dragon is, and even these weapons designed to fight a dragon do next to nothing other than one lucky natural 20 shot from Parn, which doesn't kill him, but is the only thing that even gets through his enormous AC and just crazy defenses.
This is the second time in the series that someone that we assume has rolled a natural 20 hits a dragon in the eye.
That's way hard. The GM really likes that. That is his signature roll a 20 against a dragon payoff. Once again, for more Hobbit stuff, when they go in to steal a very specific important item from the dragon and just the whole confrontation in his lair, although in The Hobbit, it's much more of a conversational match as opposed to that death match that they have in this one. But I do feel like, once again, I think it's invoking a lot of The Hobbit with how they fight on top of Shooting Star's treasure hoard and such. Oh, and I feel that, like, when they kill Shooting Star, like, his collapsing volcano lair takes out some of the characters as they try to escape, especially the bad guy characters, is a classic, as well as the, like, the characters making it out and then, like, looking back from the distance as they finally see the lair make its final death throes. I feel that's, you know, a very iconic scenario. I also feel the bad guy who has the traitor within his own ranks, the bigger bad guy who betrays them. That's also a nice little classic, you think that this guy was the big bad guy, but he is really just a mini boss, and that Ragnar is the real villain you should have been watching the whole time.
Yeah, I wasn't even sure if the rest of the party even realized what was going on. Mm-hmm. So, did they catch? I mean, they knew that they were trying to kidnap Deedlit for nefarious reasons, so I guess they'll realize that the person trying to kidnap Deedlit was not Ashram, but
I will say I enjoyed that Cashew and Deedlit immediately made their lore check and that's the scepter of domination. They knew it. They knew its stats, its history, what it can do. And Paul was like, hey, a staff.
He didn't give a crap about that staff until he was like, do not let the Marmo have that.
It's very clear who are the scholarly smart characters in the group and who is the pawn.
I feel when they come through the secret entrance into the cave, I think that just the idea of that is very iconic. But then also that there's these traps, which we were discussing, wait, who laid these traps? Where did they come from? It was the GM put traps in there. But yeah, because otherwise, how did they come about? Whatever.
Cashew does that. Sometimes the most obvious path is the wrong path because of traps. And you're like, once again, you're like, does Shooting Star have contractors that put in these traps?
I don't think he's small enough to get down in here and just, and then, anyway. Yeah, it's, you don't think about it too hard, but it's also funny. But it's also classic for there to be traps.
I wonder, once again, since we don't have the section, I wonder if maybe it's a lore thing that just was only in the books. Maybe Shooting Star took this volcano as a home, but it was originally by somebody else, and that's why that passage was there. Maybe the people who originally owned that had trapped it, and I don't know. That's me hand waving. Maybe there was an explanation in the original books that is lost to the OVA.
That's possible, because there is, they do tell us about the Dragon Slayer lore in before. That's where the lances come from, this story about, how to slay the dragon and legend and whatnot. So I guess there could have been something in there about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the GM put some traps.
I didn't think about why.
The party rolled poorly. Traps happened.
Revelations from Cardis. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
So one thing we were discussing was, and we didn't bring this up because, again, it's sort of a brief thing that happens in this particular episode, but Ragnar is in some temple. It's not Marmo. It's not Carla's previous home castle, but he's in another temple. I'm thinking maybe it's a temple of Cardis.
That makes sense.
Some sort of abandoned one. That's my guess. But I just was like, man, the real estate around here.
Okay. In Marmo, the prices are dirt cheap. You can buy for just a few copper a luxurious mansion. It's just location, location, location. And yet, he does the classic, you found me for the last time! And the guy's like, no! And he sets him on fire. We forgot that as a classic of villainy. I found it interesting that, I feel like the fight animation was very variable in this one. When Parn and Ashram's party initially meet, their clash is kind of very, a lot of still shots and more. You see a character, you see another character, and then you hear clinks of swords off screen more than animating it. But I remember when Ashram uses the Scepter of Domination to reroute the flame, they really went all out on that flame effect in that animation. So it seemed like there were a lot of key scenes that they put a lot of love into, and then the scenes they're like, all right, let's just do something here.
Also, I do feel, as a side note, that 80s and 90s animators love animating fire. They like explosions, fire, smoke, generally always lovingly animated. So, I think that was definitely present. I mean, as with all the episodes, they are definitely saving in their budget. There's a scene where Parn doesn't have a mouth. I mean, it's a mid-range scene. It's not like a close-up scene or anything. But, you know.
And then somebody also that we were watching with noticed that at one point, Ragnar is not fully colored in at points, so he looks really weird. Like, parts of his body, just like, it seems like he has an enormous neck because they didn't color in his beard and some of his clothing. Yeah, there's a very clear delineation between shots we care about and shots we do not care about.
Pyrotess always drawn lovingly for the most part in this episode, and I think that sort of leads into some of the best, like my favorite parts of it. I mean, just the end of the episode is so dramatic. It's so great. I love the pace of that. So much happens in the span of just like a couple of minutes, and it just feels so tense as we have this confrontation between our parties finally, but they can't even really fully confront each other because here's a freaking dragon.
I think my favorite part, oddly enough, was Cashew trying to dissuade Parn from joining the dragon slaying expedition, and just that, like, the lecture. I think the best part of it wasn't even the lecture. Like, Cashew was like, no, for really, for serious, I'm the adult here. You are, let's say, the younger adult. I won't say child because that seems utterly insulting, but you really, 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 really have to listen this time. I mean, for serious. But my favorite part, I think, is Dietlitz's expressions during all of this, with, like, at points, just kind of, like, quiet resignation. Like, what? This has been happening, so let's figure out how to deal with it.
I think she was also thinking that Cashew is an idiot. Like, okay, man, whatever. You think you can control him? Go ahead. All you.
I wash my hands of this. I'm just going to go along and try to save as many of you as possible, but I'm only one Dietlitz. Yeah, I think that was my favorite part. Just there was some good looks in that conversation.
And I really liked just the final moments. I feel like a lot of the episodes have good final dramatic, melodramatic moments to lead out. And everyone standing far off looking at the mountain that's like collapsing, the smoke. And the narrator says something great like, he appeared amidst flame and he leaves amidst flame, and they're talking about Ashram. I did want to say that I really forgot that this scene with Ashram and Pyrotess was in this episode. I thought it was a much later episode. Like, I thought that was part of like the finale of the show. So again, I sort of remember a lot. I clearly remember things that happened, but I do not now obviously remember the order in which they happened, because I remember that vividly. But yeah, I definitely thought that was later on.
Yeah, now I'm like, I swear I remember that they kidnapped Dietlitz, like, not that long after Shooting Star dies, but apparently that happens later on. So yeah, that's a little fuzzy to me as well.